Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and John Osher.
All right, we were not live seconds ago. We are now, Johnny. Now we're
I feel live.
Now we're live. Every Monday, live on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday, which is why John shows up, quite frankly, to hang out with us on Monday so we could talk a little bit about Wild West Guns and Gold. Did you glean anything of significance from Dave last week, you think?
Or? Well, you know, you think you did, but
you don't know until later.
At the same time, you know, I think everybody thinks they gleaned. You know, as I was writing, you know, the stories off that on Friday, I was writing something that, you know, for a little while I was thinking, okay, I got this story. I'm writing the right story. And it was basically that Caldwell was sure he liked the number three pick, that he was, you know, not really that crazy about trading down. He wanted to get the difference maker guy. And as I'm writing it, I thought to myself, how do I know this is even right? Because of the way he approaches the draft, as much as he said he wants a difference maker, there's every chance he's just putting that out there so that it looks more like he wants that so he can drive the price of a potential trade up.
Does that work?
So you just don't
know. Which reaction do you
get? Does it work? Does it
not?
From his perspective, if it works a little.
Right. Or are teams, will some teams say, man, they're going to want the farm because they don't want to trade out of there. They're not going to take the guy we want anyway. It's interesting. There. Oh, here he is. See, right there. His ears are burning, Dave Caldwell.
He just walked by, and I still don't know what he's thinking.
Walking by. but he's laughing at us walked by. There's no question. Dave told Tony and I last week that as of Friday, had not received any trade inquiry phone calls, which is not shocking.
Hadn't received any phone calls, but, you know, again, I think in his mind, he has an idea of what it would take. He has some general parameters. So the phone calls will come this week, and most teams will try to talk to somebody in all the ranges where they want to trade. Meaning, you know, if you're at 25, you're probably not going to talk to Tampa Bay about trying to move up. But you're going to talk to all the teams beforehand that you think you would have the ammunition to go up if you're even thinking about it. There'll be preliminary calls, and any groundwork will be laid well before Thursday.
They did, by the way, both Gus and Dave alluded to or outright said, basically, like, you guys know probably more of the scenario. You know what I mean? Like, we live the scenario. They're not thinking of every possible, like, you know, what happens. They got to cover their bases if we trade back to a certain point. But they're not sitting there saying, wow, is Philly going to pull a three-way trade with Cleveland and San Diego and, all, you know, and Tennessee or whatever, you know,
well,
that kind of thing.
I thought what was interesting on that front, and sometimes we talk about stuff so much in terms of what they might do, and I get questions all the time, do you think they would trade the – you know, the fifth pick for the 34th and package it with this. And there's just no way to predict all that far ahead. But it was interesting to hear Dave talk about you have to know if you're going to think to yourself, okay, I've got the three pick and I'm going to trade back and get the nine pick with a second rounder and a third rounder, extra picks there. Or do I want a first round pick next year? Important, he said, to scout not only the number, meaning I want the 36 pick, but to also have an idea of who you're going to get there.
Oh, of course.
That it's not, well, I think some people, it's easy when you look at that to think, oh, more picks are good. Well, from his perspective, if he's going to trade for a first rounder next year, is it a good first round next year? You scout ahead a little bit. If he's going to trade for a second rounder this year, okay, I'm not just trading back. I'm getting extra players, but who are those players going to be? Get a little more specific, I think, than we're able to do. So it's clear that that's part of the process that he's gone into when considering a trade this year.
I thought if it's accurate that the Jags have not received any calls. And, again, basically Tony and I are talking to him. He says only the – super complicated deals, you have to get those worked out in time. The Julio Jones deal when he was in Atlanta, they were talking about that for weeks, getting the parameters set, because Cleveland then needed to research, well, if we do this, we're going to have all these picks, what can we get for that? Like you're talking about Reggie McKenzie with the Raiders, everyone's doing these draft luncheons, draft press conferences, whatever. He said they have received trade inquiries for the number four pick, which is odd to me that, I mean, wouldn't you, if you're, other than wanting one of the quarterbacks, you're saying, all right, they're off the board. If I want somebody at four, shouldn't I talk to the guy at three first and at least find out what the price would be?
And the other thing you don't know is really what is the definition of a trade call. Meaning, you know, I would be a little surprised if at some point in the last 3 weeks, Dave and Thomas Dimitrov haven't talked on the phone about something. They're close. So is that a trade call? At some point, is it say, hey, what would it take to get up? Ah, probably this, this, and this. You know how it is. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Philosophically, they're so close that there's probably not a whole lot of detailed discussion has to go on between Thomas and Dave of who would you guys want for X? Who would you guys want for X? Yeah, that's about the parameter I'm looking for. So you know a lot of people around the league. Is it necessarily a trade call, or are you just kind of laying groundwork of, yeah, you guys would be looking for about this? Yeah, about that.
So, all right.
Yeah,
we will obviously talk a lot of draft today. Now, 3 days away, mercifully, from round one of the NFL draft coming up this Thursday night. We'll tell you about all the details of the Jaguars Bud Light draft party that'll be going on that evening, chronicling all the action and hoping you turn out here at Everbank Field for part of the celebration of the newest member or members of the Jacksonville Jaguars, depending on how the night plays out in terms of trading down as a possibility. If you want to get in today, 641-1010 is the number. Speaking of going down in the first round, not necessarily trading down, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you, which highly touted draft prospect do you think is most likely to go for a first round slide coming up on Thursday night? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL Fat Tony as well. And we've got the contest up for the Jags replica hard hat that we talked about last week. We'll give you the details of that coming up in just a few minutes. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. We'll hear a few of the thoughts. I'm not going to replay the entire interview with Dave Caldwell, but a few specifics that he talked about with us on Friday. Get John's take on that and how that coincides with what he heard really immediately following that with the draft luncheon with Dave Caldwell. And sometimes, you know, these guys break off into different groups. You hear different things in the print group. You hear different things in the broadcast group. So we'll get into some of that coming up as well. It's a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday here. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Jaguars Today on Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. They weren't playing this game last night, were they? Was this on the Vice City soundtrack a while back?
Yes, it is.
ESPN2 apparently did what last night?
They had some gaming tournament.
Heroes of the Dorm.
Yeah, I don't know what the game is. But I can tell you, I saw on Twitter that people were complaining about whatever was on ESPN2, so I was like, all right, let's go see what's going on ESPN2. I was stuck there for 30 minutes.
I couldn't
stop watching.
I think video game tournament.
Do people complain they only have one channel? I mean, can they not turn it?
Video, right. Well, there's that. And there's probably five ESPNs.
Right.
You know, just never mind. Just staying within the ESPN family. You got something else to choose from.
Yeah.
Video game tournament has every right to be on if they're going to continue to throw spelling bee down our throats.
Well, they were playing for the right to get tuition paid for the rest of their college career. I mean, they were playing for something. Technically, there was a prize.
I'm not saying, look,
I didn't have
there
a problem.
Are a lot of things that have a prize that don't belong on ESPN.
Right. When I flipped over, I couldn't turn it off.
You're a nerd.
I knew nothing about whatever was going on with this game. Never seen this game before in my life. Once I knew it was just a competition, somebody was going to win and somebody was going to lose, I had to stick around to see what was going to happen.
Can we get Gus Johnson on that call, please?
Right, and it wound up being Cal Berkeley. Cal Berkeley took out Arizona State. Take that, Prisco. Your nerds aren't as good as the Cal Berkeley
nerds. I'm surprised Arizona State. Well, I mean, there's two schools of thought here. You got the uber nerds of Cal Berkeley, right? The super, much more prestigious academic institution.
Mike, I only saw half an hour of it, but they were clearly the better team.
But Arizona State is a party school, and everybody knows how you hone your video game skills
sure.
when you're in your early 20s,
sure.
okay? You fire one up, and you go to town for the next 12 hours, okay? That's what you do. And so I think they had that working for them. And maybe they weren't in their natural state, Tony, is what I'm guessing. Maybe the rules of the competition prohibited that.
I don't know if
there's any testing going on.
I know I was watching and somebody had what they called a 100-skull golem, and the announcers the announcers were going crazy. They were like, 100-skull golem! And I was like, what does that mean?
God, I watched.
But I wanted to see what that 100 skull golem was going to do.
I'm up late last night, and for whatever reason, I'm just inertia. I don't change the channel. My wife, I think, had King of Queens on the replay, right? There's a Friends replay, the one where Joey tries to be a game show host, and the rule is same thing, 100 Skull Golem. The rules of the game show, the most convoluted thing, but by halfway through the episode, Chandler and Ross have all the rules, and it's the most insanely geeky, dweeby thing.
Sure.
That's how I spent part of my night last night, just 30 minutes of it, but so be it.
And I was criticizing Tony for watching.
What are you going
to
do?
I thought Tony had a great night compared to you.
I hear, by the way, I'm going to have to confirm this with Hacker later. Hacker, from what I understand, didn't close the place down on Friday night.
I can confirm.
Others partied on hard, Tyler. Aren't you kind of obligated to be the last man standing at your own bachelor party, Tyler?
Let's just say that I outlasted him by about 10, 15 more minutes. So.
Wow. Just 10 or 15 minutes. Okay.
The bachelor guy should close down the party. You're right.
I would think so, right? Until he probably passes out.
Until he can't.
Someone pours him into a vehicle at that point in time, lifts him gently into the back seat of a LeSabre or something like that. I don't know. All right. 641-1010. Let's say hello to Bold City Batman this morning, who I know is leading his own contingent of Bold City faithful up to Chicago for the NFL draft. What's up, Batman? How are you?
I was going good, man. How you guys doing out there? And
we're doing. How's the training, man? We know you're going to fight Superman next year. How's the training going?
I'm not even worried about it. If it's a drinking contest, you know who's going to win. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, we'll see if Clark is down with having a drinking contest in Batman versus Superman. Up, man?
Not much, man. I was listening to you guys, some of the slides and stuff, so I figured I'd chime in. I took a week off, so had a free day before I head up to Chicago, so I figured I'd weigh in with you fellas.
All right. What's your thought?
I'm a Gator fan. Batman is a Gator fan, no doubt, but honestly think Ricky Fowler, or not Ricky Fowler, I think he's going to slide hard. I really do. I want to see him, and I just don't see enough power plays from him throughout last season. I mean, he's one of the best that we had on our field last year, but, I wish Jameis Winston would fall, but we all know he's going to go number one. But I just honestly see him sliding down, not late in the first round, but at least mid-first round. I don't think he's going to top 10.
Wait. Now when you're talking about the question of who might slide, you're saying you hope he would fall not for the Jags' sake. You're hoping he would fall just because you're not a Winston fan. Is that correct?
Because I'm definitely not a Winston fan.
Okay, that's definitely what I thought. Not. I just wanted to be clear.
I foresee like Philadelphia or something. Like, hey man, I got some crab legs. We got a great seafood market, and he bites. Like, no, I'm gonna slide. I want to slide. So that's what I'm hoping for at the moment right now. We'll see how it goes.
All right, Batman. I'll see you up in Grant Park or not, for that matter. But where I'll be. Come find me on Thursday and Friday. All
for
right.
For sure. One more thing, you guys. I got talking about Batman versus Superman. I got to ask a question. Do you believe Teal?
You will. Thank you, Batman. I've seen the trailer. Nicely done.
I have a tough time seeing Fowler sliding. I don't know that the Jaguars pick him necessarily.
So what would a slide be for Dante Fowler to you?
I can't see him out of the top six or seven. I mean, it's hard to call six or seven in this draft a slide because there's seven, eight, nine guys who everybody sort of says are sort of, I guess, bunched right at the top. So if a team has a preference and wants to take somebody third or fourth, does Fowler go in fifth or sixth to a team that likes him? Is that a slide or just like a different regrouping?
I
say out of the top 10. I just can't see him getting that far out because he's got all the physical traits. Somebody's going to say, yeah, this guy fits.
It's interesting, and I know Chase, Bold City Batman, he is a hardcore Jag fan, and he's not lying. He's a Gator fan, that's his opinion. He thinks Dante Fowler is going to flop, whereas most of the people you talk to think if you're looking for safe, right, he's among the safe, if there is such a thing.
A lot of Gator fans I've heard from, the one thing that they get concerned about when they think about Fowler is the lack of huge sack numbers, the lack of standout plays. And when the NFL is scouting a pass-rushing defensive end, that doesn't concern them as much as you would think it is because it's harder in college because of the spread offenses to get huge sack numbers. That doesn't concern them as much as does he have the skill set to do it in the NFL? And NFL teams think he does.
Well, clearly, Gus talked about that specifically. He said, we're not looking for a scheme fit. We're looking for traits.
Right.
Okay, and that's what he said.
Because, but I understand why that concerns about Florida. I mean, I've talked to a lot of Florida fans that say, I sat in the stands of Florida Field. I never saw it. I never noticed this. I never noticed that. But, again, they're looking for different things when they're watching and scouting these guys.
We brought this up with Dave Caldwell last week. All right, Bill Polian was on Insider, what I think that's what it was, earlier in the week, like Tuesday of last week, and was talking about these prospects, and he loves Shane Ray. He thinks he's the best pass rusher in the draft. And his feeling, and he's not flawless, but he obviously, you know, Freeney and Mathis, he has some pretty good picks there, some good hits with Hall of Fame caliber talent.
Both undersized guys, too.
Undersized guys, and he said, look, all this set this edge garbage, don't tell me one more time about someone who can set the edge. I am not drafting a pass rusher in the top five to set any edge or to drop in coverage. He goes, one thing, quarterback on the ground, period. And he said his problem with Fowler is he would get to QBs and he wouldn't finish the play. Now, I don't know. I don't break down the tape like Bill Polian. I'm not saying he's correct and that everyone agrees with him. He may be on an island on this. But he said he's seen too many times where Fowler gets his hand on a quarterback and slides off him, doesn't bring him to the ground, and he wants productivity. He said, I'm not paying you for all this other stuff, all that's window dressing. It's great that you can do these things, but come on, we're not talking about you know, and that's why you wonder about Leonard Williams, because great player, can do a lot of things, but does he do that one premium thing that often defensive linemen are coveted for in the top five?
Well, again, I don't think... You're obviously not drafting Leonard Williams to be a, quote, sack guy.
I mean, understood, but I'm saying is what he does as valuable as that premium sack guy, if you believe that premium sack guy is there? I think that's the debate that's been going on in some part, don't you?
That's where you draw the J.J. Watt comparison, who wasn't really a sack guy coming out, but is good enough that he gets sacks in the NFL.
Well, he gets tons of them. That's the question. Do you project Leonard Williams to be that kind of guy? I'm not saying J.J. Watt, that's an unfair standard, but you expect him to be a 12-sack guy playing what he's going to play, or does his impact on all the other defensive linemen enabling them to maybe become 10- and 12-sack guys?
Certainly that's what you're
hoping. That's a question, right? And it's a tough thing to figure out. You can count the direct impact of Vic Beasley putting the quarterback on the ground X amount of times. It's tougher to quantify the guy that makes it easier for everybody else.
Yeah, and that's why, in a way... That's why it's so tempting and tantalizing, whatever you want to call it, to bring the wide receiver into the equation when you're talking about the Jaguars at number three, because it's very easy to see the impact that an Amari Cooper, that a Kevin White could make. And to me, Cooper is very safe. He's very much a guy that it's hard to see busting, because he already has shown that he does the things that you need to do in the NFL, meaning run routes, meaning use your hands, to get off of defenders. He already does those things well. You can see him translating very well. I don't know that he has the top end of one of these elite top five receiver type ones in the NFL, but it's hard to see him busting. So, I mean, there are so many arguments, so few clear-cut favorites that, again, going back to the top of the show, that's why it was hard to really read Dave Caldwell on Friday.
And look, as you said in your story on Jaguars.com, which I'm not quite sure why you felt the need to write after we had him on the show, that's an inside joke for John, who was telling us, what's the point of having Luke Jokel on? I just wrote a story about him. Quid pro quo, turnabout, and all that stuff. Anyway, felt like he was talking up everybody, right? And Leonard Williams came up, he's like, look, Leonard Williams could start the year in there for Derek Marks, and Derek gets healthy, they're on the field at the same time, he's going to play. And he's glowingly talking about all the versatile ways we can, trust me, Leonard Williams, we'll find ways to use Leonard Williams if we were to select him. And it almost felt like he's saying too many positive things about Leonard Williams.
Well, again, I think Dave seems to have three or four guys, he said this, and I believe this was the truth, that he likes at the top of the draft. And if you take what Dave said with what Gus said, it's going to take a lot for them to come off that number three. It's going to take a really good deal, because there is a feeling that they need a difference maker. And by difference maker, I keep talking about the guy that other players at practice sort of stop and watch and go, wow, that guy's good. When you see him in the locker room, you know he belongs in the NFL, and you know that he knows he's good. They don't have enough of those guys. So if you believe they're going to improve, if you believe they're going to draft lower in the draft next year, now is the time to get that, and you don't want to slide back and risk, as Dave said, getting two solid players as opposed to one difference maker. They need a guy that other teams have to account for.
Tyler, if you have Dave Caldwell cut 10 to play here, we asked him about that specifically. You know,
it's radio jargon. Cut 10.
Cut 10.
I'm learning something today.
That's the easiest way I could do it right there. Cut 10. We've got a cut sheet. We asked him about that, you know, specifically. Is it better to have multiple good players or one exceptional, call him a stud player, for lack of a better term? Here's what he said.
For where we are right now, if this was 2 years ago, I would have said multiple players. But for where we are, if we can get a stud, we'll take a stud.
Yeah, pretty straightforward right there, right? I mean, and that dovetails with what you're saying.
Yeah,
right? It's
going
to be hard to get him off that spot.
Yeah, and I think that is the general feeling of we need a guy who, you know, again, I can't say any better than that. A difference maker, a stud, who other teams have to account for, who's going to play above the X's and O's, do special things. And they don't have enough of those. They need one.
All right. It is a Wild West Guns of Gold Money. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, everything from revolvers to sporting arms and anything in between. Wild West Guns of Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. And as Johnny well knows, you can even trade your gold for guns right there at Wild West Guns.
A stud and a difference maker feels absolutely comfortable on Wild West Golds.
There's no question. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
the only type of people.
He belongs there.
Those are the type of people that go, are the studs and the difference makers. We know our listening audience is full of them. Guns4Jax.com, guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com, or visit Wild West Guns and Gold on South Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today. Back with some thoughts from Dave Caldwell and more on the upcoming NFL draft with John Osier. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars today on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. I shall go no further without telling you about our Predict the Pick contest. It's already probably a segment behind planning to do that anyway. Brought to you by Foundation Pros of Florida, Foundation Professionals of Florida. Predict the Pick contest asks you to do this. Name five players that you think the Jags will select at any point in this upcoming NFL draft. You can name all, you could all have five guys that are among the top prospects, and maybe you'll hit on one of them. The point is to get as many right as possible. So your whatever your strategy is, maybe you can have a couple of those first-round possibilities, a Dante Fowler and Amari Cooper.
Sure.
And then you take some shots on some guys you think may be targets for the Jags later. The point is whoever gets the most names right, and all ties are broken by the judges, read me and Tony if I need some help on deciding, but all ties will be broken at our discretion.
That's really something you need help with? Like you can't,
well,
you can't get that done on your own?
Well, it depends. Like if they all have to, it depends on, you know, what we value more. We'll discuss. Would you give more credence to the guy who got the third pick in the draft or the guy who got the 36th pick? More difficult to get the 36th pick, right?
Sounds like you got a little too much power in this thing.
I may. I'm the one who came up with the contest. All right. Somebody's got to be the tie-breaking vote.
I'm not sure I trust you on this front.
All right, fine. anyway, you can enter it one of two ways. You can enter on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. I don't have Facebook. I don't do Facebook. That's not fair. Well, you can email me at mikeD@1010XL.com. I'm not going to take tweets because I'll lose them. Tweets that come in today will be buried at the bottom of my timeline. You can email or you can post on the Facebook page. The prize is what we talked about last week. We got some of those commemorative 20th season of Jaguar football hard hats that they were given out last year when folks were coming in and touring, checking out the video boards going up. And the catch is with our hard hat, it's autographed by a bunch of members of the Jags coaching staff and players as well, including Blake Bortles, Marquise Lee, Luke Jokel, Gus Bradley's on there, and a couple of other coaches and players in there as well that we collected over the course of last summer, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than let it sit around when we're celebrating the 21st or 22nd season of Jaguar football, let's get that thing out to you in your greedy little hands right now. So go to the Jaguars Today Facebook page if you want to see the actual hard hat, or if you just want to send a list of five players you think that the Jags could select at some point in the NFL draft, you can email them to MikeD@1010XL.com. It's that simple. You've got until the draft begins on Thursday night, at which point the contest will be closed. Once the commissioner walks to the podium to open up the draft, contest is over with. There you have it.
I'm ready.
You okay with that?
Yeah.
Five guys. Who are your five guys? If you had to make a list like that, how many guys would you feel you had to list, first of all, to get the third pick right now?
I'd say three.
Fowler, Williams, Cooper?
Yeah.
Yeah,
why not?
Why not Beasley?
His girth concerns me.
Okay.
If they're picking at three, Williams and Fowler seem those three, Williams, Fowler, and Cooper seem like the guys that I am sure will be good in the NFL.
And
as sure as you can be.
I'm pretty sure if asked to come up with a top five list that they would be in the top five list. That's my best guess.
Right.
I mean, as sure as you can be without really knowing, right? And so
Todd Gurley? Isn't that knee back, meaning running back? At three, again, as we talked about during the break, I said if they were picking around 9 or 11, I'd love it. And the first thing out of your mouth was exactly right. If you love him at 9, why not love him at 3? And I get that if you like a guy, take him. But running back at 3, it's just hard to swallow.
But I agree with you, Bob. Right. I don't think he'd be the top guy. But if he is the top guy on their board,
right,
I would take him at 3.
And after saying all that, if they come out and say Todd Gurley at number 3 and that's the pick, I get it.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I could look at that and see, you know, I wouldn't have a huge problem with that pick.
We could all be fooling ourselves. Sure. They might like Kevin White more than they like Amari Cooper. We just don't know.
That wouldn't be shocking.
Right, it wouldn't be shocking, right? So, I mean, we sit here and
I've talked Cooper for
guys.
The last few weeks because, again, I'm old school. I like a guy that I know is going to be good, and I don't have to worry about absolutely crapping out, which you never know on a player, but I feel like Cooper's not going to do that. But they may be looking at White and saying, I know he's not going to crap out. I know he's going to be good.
Right.
So that's always the intriguing things we talked about. 5-6 weeks leading up to the draft, we start talking about things, and then we start believing the things we're talking about as truths, and that's exactly what it is. And we never really know what they're talking about as truths.
Ain't that the truth?
So we may be completely off. They may love White, Beasley, and Ted Smith from Akron.
Devontae Parker.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Maybe they love Henry Anderson, defensive end from Stanford.
Or they may love Shane Ray. They may love, you know, you just don't know. That's what's so intriguing about it. I don't think they love Ted Smith from Akron.
You don't?
No.
Maybe. The reason I bring up Henry Anderson, Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback column, Peter King polled 6 draft pundits, for lack of a better term. Gil Brandt of NFL.com.
That's a good term.
That's not a bad term,
yeah,
right?
You're good.
Greg Cosell of NFL Films, Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, Kiper and McShay, both from ESPN, and he just listed Pro Football Focus. Okay, didn't list a specific individual, but Pro Football Focus ranks players analytically. They grade players analytically and such. And he asked them, just simply give us your top 10 players, regardless of position, regardless of team needs. And the one to me that stands out in all this list is Pro Football Focus has Henry Anderson, defensive end of Stanford, ranked 9th overall, which is stunning to me because nobody's even talking about this guy as a first-round draft prospect. Maybe Pro Football Focus is right. Maybe their metric-based analysis is missing the boat on some of the other things that people look for. That was really the outlier,
Him go like 18, and everyone's like, who?
Right, right. Well, now we'll know, right?
All right, and this is what I talked like last week when I was saying I just want to be in the room once to see what NFL teams actually think about all these players. Like, just let me sit in there for 10 minutes so I can look at a board for a couple minutes and to see a name like that somewhere at like 16 or 17 and go, who the heck is that, and why are they on their board at that point? But
right.
If the teams evaluate them that way, that's where they keep them.
It would be fascinating to see the board. I'm always struck by, and again, I've never been in a draft room on draft day. So, but when you talk to people who are, there's sort of this perception sometimes that it's chaos, right? That there's all these on the clock arguments, and they're saying, no, we need to take this guy. In reality, it's very, if it's run well, it's very quiet, it's very calm, and there's a board, and there's guys coming off of it, and you might have a discussion of, okay, we're sure on this one. Yeah, we're sure on this one. This is the guy. We're like, all
right. Right. Or we have X amount of players as first and second round grades, and there's one guy left, and it's late third round. Oh, do we make a move up to get this guy?
Right.
Do we move up to, because all of a sudden he's presenting tremendous value to us.
Right.
We think he's a lot better than his draft position.
And there's also not a tremendous amount of that going on this week. If you know what you're doing, the draft board is pretty much set, and you don't go back in on the Monday before the draft and start moving guys around on a whim. You've made your assessments. You've assigned your grades.
Sure.
What if a homeless man on the day of the draft suggests you should draft a certain player, a la last year with Johnny Manziel? Was that a good way?
A homeless man.
Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Cleveland Browns, said on the morning of the draft, he's walking by a homeless guy in the street who said, "Draft Manziel," and that was he said that was like the final tipping thing his head that made him decide.
Well, I didn't take into account the homeless man. Obviously, if there's a homeless man
who has some draft some insight,
then go with that. That aside, trust your board.
Okay. Well, and it didn't mean that to be homeless. What if it's just a random stranger on the street?
Worse, some guy on Twitter.
or better, for that matter.
Sure.
Right?
But wouldn't you love to have a look at, like, I don't know, the Jaguars board in 2010? When they took Tyson Alualu, right?
Right.
And everyone's like, where did that come from?
Right, he's like sixth on the board.
Right. Wouldn't you love to see the players that were around him that they might have missed on a little bit? And Tyson's been a fine player here, but he hasn't been that guy that you're drafting at that position in the draft. Wouldn't you love to see what else they had around Tyson Alualu that they weren't even willing to take the trade that went with the next pick?
That seemed to be the storyline, right?
Right?
They were afraid that the Dolphins might take him, and they were picking very close behind them. I can't remember the exact sequence if Miami
was 5 years ago. They can let us have a peek now.
Right? Well, do they keep those around? Does that like belong to them, or did Gene Smith pack that up and take that with him and make sure no prying eyes ever got a look at that listing? I'm not sure how that would work, Johnny O.
I think it's taken down very quickly.
Is that gone? Is that gone and forgotten? All right. A little bit later on, when we have a few minutes, we'll look at some of the highlights of these guys' top 10. A lot of the usual suspects in there, but the ordering of them and how frequently Todd Gurley appears as well among the top 10 prospects, I think, is interesting as well. By the way, not in the top 10 for Pro Football Focus, but their number one guy, by the way, is Amari Cooper. Number two is Danny Shelton, the defensive tackle. A lot of people are very high on Shelton, but more as like an anchor space eater type, from what I understand.
That's what he is.
Which is nothing wrong with that, but at what he does, they grade him as the second best player in this upcoming draft. So we'll take a look at some of those rankings, and we'll hear a few thoughts, if you missed them, from Dave Caldwell on some pertinent issues that are going to impact the Jags' decision-making process leading up to the draft over the next 3 days. This date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL coming up next, though. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, the senior writer from Jaguars.com, and Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
Well, all right then. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, April 27th, 1961, the National Football League officially selected Canton, Ohio to be the future home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The hall would officially open 2 years later in 1963. That would be 61 plus 2. See, I can do that math. Born on this date in 1932, happy birthday, 83 years young, to Chuck Knox, NFL head coach with the Rams, Bills, and Seahawks. Three-time NFL Coach of the Year, and a great nickname for that ground-heavy attack, ground chuck, that running game-heavy attack back in the 1980s, particularly with Seattle. 1941, Leroy Jordan, former member of the Alabama Crimson Tide, selected by the Dallas Cowboys. Five Pro Bowls he would ultimately go on to. 1954, Herm Edwards, born on this date, 61 years old, the highlight of Edwards' playing career, coming back on November 19, 1978, the miracle at the Meadowlands, the Giants leading the Eagles 17-12. Eagles with no timeouts, but instead of running out the clock, Giants quarterback Joe Pisarcik tried to hand the ball off to running back Larry Zonka. Herm Edwards scooped it up and ran in for the score, and that play obviously did go on to be known as the miracle at the Meadowlands. In New York, they simply call it the fumble. And the victory formation came out of that. Philadelphia started using it, saying, hey, if we were able to take advantage of this at the end, let's come up with a formation that's foolproof to end the game in those situations, and thus the victory formation was born. All that happened on this date in football history, brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That has been this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
According to Yahoo's Charles Robinson, you can count Dallas and Arizona out of the potential Adrian Peterson sweepstakes. It's becoming very clear with the Vikings' current asking price for the running back. No one is willing to pay that price tag. So, does Adrian decide Minnesota is a fine place to continue to play, or does he become enough of a headache that the Vikings relent and lower that asking price? The saga continues as we get ready for the NFL draft. The Tennessee Titans signed veteran wide receiver Hakeem Nicks to a one-year deal on Friday afternoon. Jim Wyatt, who's come on with Mike and I over the course of the last several years, on Twitter, the reaction that he got to the Nicks signing. Number one, a signed Mettenberger will be starter. Number two, more weapons for Rivers. Number three, giving up on Hunter. Number four, so they're not taking a wide receiver. Fans react the same way everywhere across the league. And finally, you can all react to this story however you would like, but I, for one, can understand why Mark Sanchez, maybe the person in the entire football watching and playing universe that is the most tired of the Tim Tebow story. His quote to CSNPhilly.com was, quote, "He's obviously a great guy. He works hard, and we needed another guy to throw while Sam Bradford is still recovering." So that's kind of the reason there for the signing, at least as it was explained to me.
Right. Mark Sanchez probably like, "Hey, Mark, I know we're signing Tebow here. Look, we need a guy to throw. Bradford's down, blah, blah, blah." I know Dan Hicken took great exception to that because I guess Tim Tebow's playoff resume is much more, oh, wait, no, it's not close to Mark Sanchez's playoff resume in all actuality. Mr. Butt Fumble with four road victories in his first 2 years in the playoffs in the NFL and went to back-to-back AFC title games.
Yeah.
So, more accomplished, believe it or not. And yes, nobody's sitting there saying, wait a minute, Mark Sanchez has proven with those four road playoff victories.
Proven winner.
That he should be, yes, he's a proven winner. And
no,
he should be a starter somewhere.
He started for the Eagles last year and you were like, oh, Mark Sanchez.
Oh, Mark Sanchez. But yeah, you know what? Mark Sanchez in that system wasn't all that terrible at times.
Okay. Yeah.
At other times he was, because he's Mark Sanchez, despite all the playoff victories. Apparently that doesn't guarantee you future success.
No.
In the National Football League. Does it now, Johnny?
No, it does not.
No, it does not.
I'll come out strongly on that one. No.
Yes. No. Big N-O. All right. A couple of highlights. We were mentioning Peter King polling six different draft pundits. Okay. Gil Brandt of NFL.com. Here's his top 10. He had Leonard Williams at number one. Nobody's going to be shocked at that. Dante Fowler, Amari Cooper, Kevin White at number four. He's got Winston at five, Todd Gurley at six, Marcus Mariota, Brandon Scherff, the offensive lineman, Trey Waynes, the corner out of Michigan State, and Breshad Perriman out of UCF. Mm-hmm. A lot of local interest I see on Twitter in Breshad Perriman here. And interesting, though, that he's got him above Devontae Parker, who is the consensus number three wide receiver right now. Great.
You've seen that a little more in
with Perriman?
International. You know, some guys throwing Perriman in there, so we'll see.
We will see. I mean, who knows?
Because there's always those on draft night where you're like, wow, that guy went, you know, against the consensus, because so much of the consensus is just guys reading other guys' mock drafts.
Well, most of what you look, I've watched Devontae Parker play three or four games, and to me, he's, and this may not be a perfect comparison, he's kind of like Larry Fitzgerald in that he's not always going to run by you, but if the ball's in his area, he's the one who's going to come down with it. It's not going to be the defensive back. He can go over you and get it. He's got great hands. He looked like a man among boys playing Florida State this year, quite frankly. And I think Perriman will appeal to, you know, that size, speed, ratio type drafting team that looks at him and says, you know, like Gus says, give us traits, not necessarily scheme and how you play.
Right.
I'm not talking about specifically for Perriman, but just as a general thought. Greg Cosell, NFL Films. A lot of people think he is they say he watches more tape than anyone. No, it doesn't work directly for an NFL team. Who's to say if he does or not? I guess a lot of people are, but whether they're right.
No, Greg always does.
Oh, he does.
Fantastic.
He does his research
and
does a lot of research.
Has his own thoughts, which not everybody does.
He's got Dante Fowler, number one overall player in the draft. Todd Gurley, however, number two. Amari Cooper, Trey Waynes, Leonard Williams, Randy Gregory at six. Remember, he's not going to evaluate off the field, I wouldn't think. Excuse me. Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston in that order at 7 and 8. Kevin White and Andres Pete, who most people have Scherf as the top offensive lineman. He has Pete as the top offensive lineman. There was some buzz this week that the Jets are enamored with Andres Pete and may, in fact, target him in a small trade back. Now there's more talk that they may move backwards rather than up to get Mariota. We were just talking about that. You don't think there's going to be near the clamor for Mariota on draft day as there, it appears?
Again, when you say that, it only takes one to clamor for there to be a trade up to two. But it was interesting. I listened to Ian Rappaport on with Prosser and Hicken, and Ian's much more tied in terms of talking to different teams before the draft and having contacts on that level than most people would be. And he thinks the best chance for a trade is at number five, and didn't necessarily think that there was going to be a trade at number two, and didn't necessarily think it was going to be a trade at number three. Well, when Daniel Jeremiah was on a conference call a few weeks ago, and he's a guy who's on this list as well, he's a solid draft guy who talks to a lot of people, he believed that there were more teams talking about other teams that they believe loved Mariota than there were teams who were saying to him, we've got to have this guy. So unless there are two teams saying, we want to have this guy, let's go get him, then you wonder if there's really going to happen. And you wouldn't be surprised if it's just one of those where people are saying, this guy has all the traits, we really like him, but there may not be that one team willing to give up things to go get him and make him their franchise guy. So again, I don't know that this assumption that Mariota is going to go number two that seemed to be in the air the last 10 days or so is really going to happen on draft night.
Here's Rappaport earlier today on with the drill, talking about what he does think will happen with the number two pick.
But what actually happens at number two? You know, there's going to be some teams who are interested, the Rams, the Browns, the Chargers, and potentially trading for the Titans' number two pick. It's complicated. It's very, very hard to swing a trade like that. And, you know, my sense is that no one is really going to be offering as much as, say, the Rams got for RG3. And then is it really worth it?
I agree with the latter part. I don't agree with the former part. I agree with the latter part where he says he doesn't know if anyone would be willing to pay the price. But it's not that complicated. Either pay the price or don't pay the price. Trades happen all the time. When Cleveland moved down, I forget the exact pick, maybe six, all the way down in the late 20s, Atlanta said, here's what we're willing to give you. I mean, it's either a question of, do we take this much or do we not take that much? And this process,
complicated may be, you know, I can't get inside Ian's head, but may have been thinking in terms of complicated if there are three teams involved, which you've sort of been
possibly
hearing some of late, that some of these teams that need to get way up to number two may need a third team involved to make that happen.
Philadelphia could trade off Bradford for an additional, like a better first-round pick that they got offered for. They could get like the 12th from Cleveland, use 12 and 20 and something else to move up.
So my guess is he may be talking about something like that. If there are multiple teams picks involved, then it probably gets complicated to report. I know that.
Yeah, well, it certainly would get complicated in that standpoint, too, that you're not going to make that deal if you're Philly. You wouldn't think, who knows at this point with Chip Kelly.
Right.
He's proven to be a little bit unpredictable. But you wouldn't say, all right, let's trade Sam Bradford for the 12th pick and then ask Tennessee if 12, 20, and a third rounder is going to get the job done.
But I thought coming from a good national reporter who's clearly talking
also said that Mercedes Lewis was on the trading block and then said he was pulled off. And Dave Caldwell specifically told us Friday he was never on the trading block. So take it with a grain of salt that these guys are not always right. Sorry to interrupt your thought.
Yeah, my guess,
Sorry about that. I derailed your whole thought.
No, I mean, I think there was certainly an option to trade Mercedes at some point. I don't know if on the block, but I think that was a possibility talked about within league circles. But For Ian to say that it was a possibility that that price was going to be too high is not insignificant 3 days before the draft.
I get your point. He may be hearing that. And that may be the case. And the thing that, like, Peter King again writes today, if Tennessee likes Mariota enough, he says, that if they're unable to trade out of the spot, they would take him. He's convinced they would take him. Well, if you like him enough to take him number two, right, why would you be looking to trade out of the spot? That's what I don't understand.
Right. And again, I think a lot of these things that you're hearing indicate that perhaps there's not a passion to go get this guy that there would have been with an Andrew Luck or an RG3 a few years back.
Okay.
So
I think it depends on the team you're talking about. I do think Philadelphia and Chip Kelly really wants Marcus Mariota. Now, they can't do any of that stuff, like the trading and trying to get 12 for Bradford and all. You can't do it until draft night, because while we're all pretty sure Jameis Winston's going to be the number one overall pick, if Mariota's the guy they want, right, if Tampa's not moving down to 20 or 12 if they're trying to get a quarterback. They want to stay there that one or two spot and get the guy they want. So if Tampa decided Mariota's the guy, and if you're Philadelphia, you need to trade away Bradford for the 12th pick, well, now where are you?
Right.
Like, you can't do it until draft night. But Bradford
But you
has,
have to have it in place before
right,
draft night.
Bradford has indicated that he thinks, his sense is that the Eagles are trying to trade him right now. Like, that's the sense he has of what's going on, which would make sense if that's
the
kind of deal
they're
putting in place.
So they're set there,
right,
at least. So that should be
enough.
Right? All right. Moving on. We'll get some more of these top tens here. Let me just give you the top three from each of the rest of the pundits. Daniel Jeremiah, in a poll Peter King conducted, listed Leonard Williams, Kevin White number two, and then Amari Cooper as his top three. So that's the highest praise anyone gave to Kevin White.
That was Jeremiah?
That was Jeremiah. Mel Kiper also has Leonard Williams at the top, followed by Amari Cooper, Dante Fowler, which is seems to be, as we talked about, the Jags' likeliest, if we were guessing today, top three in some order.
But Jeremiah having White as high as he does shows you he's a guy, out of the guys that nobody's, I shouldn't say nobody, out of the guys that a lot of people aren't talking about as top five, he's a guy that it would not shock you that much to see him slip into three or four.
I do see, on occasion, for instance, here's Dane Brugler's updated mock draft, CBSSports.com today. He's got the Bears taking Kevin White and Amari Cooper lasting to the 10th pick to the St. Louis Rams, for instance. So not everybody is convinced that Cooper would go ahead of White if they both go in the top 10.
It will be interesting to see how this plays out.
It will. It will. But in the meantime, we got to figure out what's going to happen. Todd McShay's got Winston, Leonard Williams, Amari Cooper. He's the only one with Jameis Winston that high. And then Pro Football Focus had Amari Cooper, Danny Shelton, and Dante Fowler in the top three as well. So
I mean, I said that a second ago. What I meant was all it takes is one surprise at the top for a player to quote-unquote miss his slot. Like an Amari Cooper, if one team, if say the Jaguars pass on him and then the Raiders do, well, then all of a sudden – it's not absurd to think two or three more teams go defense, and then Kevin White goes, and boy, all of a sudden he is there at 10.
Right.
And that's what we talked about a few weeks ago, why all these teams bring guys in for pre-draft visits. If you're Dave Caldwell and you're at 3, maybe you trade back to 11 for some reason. You don't want to be shocked that night and have Amari Cooper sitting there and not have done all your due diligence.
Right.
So even though it seems silly for, say, the Patriots to bring in – you know, Amari Cooper or whoever. That's just an example. That's why teams do this, because all it takes is one weird slide and Aaron Rodgers is sitting there for you at 24, and you better have done your research.
Absolutely. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear a few more thoughts from Dave Caldwell as he joined us last Friday on a few specifics we asked him about this upcoming NFL draft, see if we can glean anything of importance out of that. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Money. We continue. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony, live from EverBank in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, we don't look at it like that. We just look at it as game by game and going out there and competing and trying to come out victorious at the end of each one of those games, but playing our best. And, you know, we feel good about the talent. We feel good about the coaching staff that we have. And so, like, you know, no limits. You can kind of decipher it however you'd like to decipher it.
No Limits. That no was limits. The Gus Bradley slogan we picked up last week. One of the new Jaguar phrases for the year. That was Dave Caldwell on this Friday here on Jaguars Today. And John,
little question, black crows in the background in a Wild West.
Are you okay with that?
Oh, I love it. I love the
apparently
crows.
I don't think you love the crows as much as your cohort Ron O'Howard loves Timberlake.
No,
he practically came out of his seat when we
he
got Timberlake rejoined last
week. He was excited when JT.
Really?
Yeah.
JT. JT. That's JT. Very excited.
I got to process that one a while.
Pro wrestling and Timberlake. Those are the two things that get him up and going.
Well, I'll let me think on that.
File for future reference. All right. The question I posed to Dave Cole, I said point blank. Here's what Jaguar fans asked me, and they want to ask you point blank. Should they expect this team to be in playoff contention this year? And his answer was, as you heard it, we don't think of it that way.
Right.
We think about being competitive game to game. That's great. Philosophically, I get the whole Zen thing, right? The process, right? You can't, it's not the destination. It's every step to get there, and you got to pay attention to detail. Fans, ultimately, that's a bottom line question
for
fandom, right? Are we going to suck again? Are we going to be good this year? No, sir, right?
No,
I mean, I'm not trying
to run
anybody down. There are a lot of fans. I don't want to hear any more about process, this, that, the other thing, win games, period, done. And if it doesn't happen this year to the pace, there's going to be a lot more noise and a lot more chatter this year.
Oh, I don't understand any question. Again, I've said all along, I didn't think 500 was realistic last year. I think it's much more realistic this year. I don't know about 10. I don't know about that number it takes to get to the playoffs. I think between 6 and 8, 7, 8 in there is much more realistic, and I think it's fair for fans to expect that.
Can you have a fighting shot? Just a shot when December opens up. You know what I mean? I mean, because last year, they may be technically, mathematically still in it because of the way the math works with all the tiebreakers and all that. But there's a difference between being realistically having a chance and being mathematically alive.
I think they can be on the edge. I think they've got to – they need those first two because that 6 of 7 that aren't here at this field, that's a tough road. But if you can get to the bye, meaning after you play your two home games.
Sure.
But if you can get to the bye, 3-4, 4-3 in that area, then yes, they have a fighting chance.
5-2, 6-1 in that area.
I mean, we talked about it last
week. Go big or go home.
Right. When the schedule came out.
No limits.
If you're not 2-0 coming out of that shoot, you're staring 0-4 potentially. If you don't win one of those first two home games, going to New England and to Indianapolis, you're staring at 0-4, and then where's the season going? I mean, there's the real potential of that conversation starting.
Not that they can't beat Indy, and I mean, it's very unlikely they're going to go into Foxborough and beat the defending Super Bowl champs. Even they will lose some games this year.
Sure.
But, yeah, you're right, Tony.
0-4 cannot happen. It cannot happen with this football team, especially with those two games to open the year here at home.
Let's get to a couple of thoughts from Dave Caldwell from our conversation on Friday. John, get your input on these. Tony, I believe, asked him about the conversation about the need to have a number one wide receiver and comparing that as a premium position to some of the other things we focused on, like pass rush, quarterback, and offensive tackle. Here's what he had to say.
Having a number one really helps you open some things up offensively. When you have a guy on the outside or a receiver that can get open from anywhere in the field, defenses can no longer keep 8 in the box, which now enables the running game to get going, play action, pass. So if you have a number one receiver that makes defenses keep, two deep safety, out there, then, that helps, the whole offense. And, in a situation like us where we have, two really good tight ends, and if we got a dynamic guy on the perimeter to, stretch the field, then that enables us to do a lot of things offensively.
Before we get to his next thought, chicken or the egg, Johnny? The wide receiver game helped that running game, as he suggested. The running game opened things up for the wide receivers. Which is more important?
Yeah, I think in this day and age, the wide receiver opens things up for the running game a little more.
I could see that.
Pete
Prisco has said, and others have said, I don't know if this is a Pete original, but I like to give credit where it's due. You throw to score, you run to win, right? You throw to put points on the board, and then you close out games.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much Pete said about the running game. He's
but true. Yeah. Good point. You know what? What am I thinking?
I'm sure he said throw to score.
I may be crediting the wrong guy. Throw to score, and then throw some more.
Right, and then throw some more would be more Pete's thing.
Yeah,
I mean, but they it all sort of goes back to weapons, and whichever you have first is fine, but you need the weapons to make defenses consider things, and obviously that's what a number one receiver would do here. All of a sudden, you have a defense that has to pay much more attention than they have in the past. We saw it last year when Denard had three or four good games. All of a sudden, they started focusing on that, didn't have to worry about the pass, and they were able to shut the Jaguars' offense down after that.
Dave Caldwell joined Dempsey and I in studio on Friday. We also asked him, look, we've talked about Randall Cobb and his team going after him at the beginning of the free agency period, and we asked Dave about how a receiver who can play inside benefits this football team.
Well, the nice thing about where we're at right now is with Allen Robinson, Marquise, and Hearnsey, Hearnsey's a really good slot receiver, did some good things for us last year, so that enables us to have flexibility there. But Marquise played some inside, and we even think Allen, with his size, creating a mismatch, not your traditional option route runner like a Wes Welker or a guy like that, but maybe more so that can create mismatches with team's third or fourth corner because of his size and his ability to catch the ball contested. So having an outside receiver doesn't give us as many issues as some teams because the other three guys are so flexible and versatile.
Right. So adding a guy who's Kevin White is an outside guy. He's that 6'3", down-the-field threat, which does, though, fly in the face of kind of what he talked about a little bit. You know, with the we wanted Randall Cobb specifically because he could play in the slot and we could leave those two guys on the outside. That's where we want them to develop and flourish. And this kind of opened up some wiggle room. I'm not saying it's not true, but at the same time, I read that as more, if I was going to guess on a red herring, there was more of a red herring in that one than some other answers.
Well, the situation they're in, they're at the top of the draft. They're picking third unless something drastically changes. So they're having to look at four or five guys. Leonard Williams, they've already got some guys who play that spot, but what could happen to make us stronger if Leonard Williams is on the team? Same thing with the receivers. They've got guys who sort of play there, but are these guys they're looking at, Leonard Williams, Amari Cooper, Kevin White, are they better enough to make it worth our while to take this guy and then figure out what these guys we already have can do well around that? And that's what they have to decide, is who's going to help you more, and then what you're going to do with the guys already in the team if you decide that these guys are that big of an impact that it's worth taking at three.
Prisco claims throw to score, run to win is him. Throw to score, throw some more, then run to win. I believe is actually probably went, right?
And keep pushing run to win down.
Yes. Throw to score, but if you're up big, just you can tack on a few more through the air.
Throw to score.
While you're at
throw
it.
To score, throw to score, run to win.
And throw,
throw a little in between that.
And then throw some more. All right, quickly, Dave Caldwell on what his ideal Leo pass rusher looks like.
Obviously, the explosion, getting off the ball to snap, and then just being able to sack the quarterback. You know, that's going to be their main job. You know, if you had a Leo that could play three downs, that could play to run too, that's a great situation to have. But we have guys like Brancher. You know, Brancher was having a great year last year before he tore to groin. Could have had a 10-plus sack season, we felt like, and even left some on the field while he was playing. And then you got Clem, who was coming off 8.5 sacks, even though he's 32 years old, I believe he is right now. So we feel good about that. And then you have Ryan Davis, who had 6.5 sacks. And so there's some reason for optimism with the guys we have right now. Chris Smith is a guy that was a rookie last year, had 3 sacks. So we're getting production out of those guys, and which enables us to be pretty flexible in this year's draft.
Again, factually correct.
Touching bases.
Factually correct, Tony. Hey, we got this. We got it all. We don't need anybody.
That's right.
We don't need anybody. We got everything. But look, you're talking about Andre Branch, who, while, yes, he was having a good season right before he got hurt, still right now his status is to be playing as a lame duck, final year of his deal, upcoming. The next guy you went to, 32, going to be 33 during the season.
Yep.
Yes, he had 8 sacks last year. Is that the guy beyond this season that you think you can count on? If we're betting today, is Chris Clemens playing more than one more year with the Jags? I'd say no.
Right.
You know, that's if that were the bet. So while all those things you said were correct, that it's still, you still don't have that one guy we often talk about that gives defensive coordinators nightmares in game planning.
Well, and the things that you just talked about are why there's a school of thought of people who write me, why would you go pass rusher when you had so many sacks last year? And the things you just said are exactly why. Plus, they didn't get outside of their sacks, they didn't have that many pressures. They got home on a great deal, on a great percentage of their hurries last year. So they can still get better in the pass rush, but the biggest reason is you're drafting for the next 5 to 7 years, you hope, not for next year. So that's why a pass rusher makes a lot of sense for this team.
Contending with the defensive end conversation, another question we asked Dave Caldwell when he was in here with us was about, look, with the way the college game is going, all those spread offenses, everything that's going on, how difficult is it to evaluate the transition for defensive ends from the college game to the NFL game?
Yeah, I think at any position there is a transition process. And, you know, we want to judge every player by what they do their rookie year. And so often that, you know, sometimes it's year two or year three where a player really emerges. Or conversely, a rookie comes in and has a lot of success, and then you don't hear from him, you know, from year two to year three to year four or the rest of his career. So I think the biggest thing for us, and Coach Braylon and his staff do a great job of developing players, and I think our mindset with the amount of juniors that come out, with the way the college game is, no matter where we take a guy, there is a level of development that needs to be done, and we're going to do everything in our power for that player to maximize his ability.
Thoughts?
Generally speaking, I've said all along, you don't take a player in the draft thinking he's going to be huge immediate impact, certainly early on in his rookie season, but maybe not period as a rookie, even if it's in the top five. Mm. I agree with him. There's going to be development.
There should be development. Guys should get better. I want a guy who can impact this football team immediately if you're selecting with the third overall pick. And to me, this team is not good enough that you're not going to pluck an immediate starter.
He's going to start right away.
Right. Well, and that
there's
going to
be struggles right away too.
There can be struggles, but if you start, for instance, if it's Amari Cooper, he needs to be the best guy in that wide receiver core, or else you shouldn't have taken him. Right. I mean that's to me from the way I'd look at it. And
in week one,
maybe not week one, but not too long after. Because again, what's the patience level? What is the developmental time frame that you're allowed? The ownership is incredibly patient with the vision of building it the right way, but at a certain point, they say that's all that's missing. Well, it's continue to be missing until they get them, right?
Takes time for rookies.
Some.
Most.
Some it does.
Most.
Sometimes. I mean, all right, didn't take time for, you know, Odell Beckham, didn't right. take time for Mike Evans, didn't take a whole of Sammy Watkins when he was healthy. Last year, if you're drafting third overall and you're taking a wide receiver in today's day and age with as many accomplished guys as wide open as the passing games are mm-hmm. in college, I expect instant impact. I do. That's me. And doesn't mean they can't get better along the way.
Right.
But I don't want them to come in and look like, you know, some, I, you know.
It has gotten to the point where if you're taking receiver at that point, last season's class certainly skewed expectations.
Right, but even going back, you talk about A.J. Greens, you talk about, Julio Jones, and if you're taking him at number three overall, he should be a difference-making kind of guy. We can go deeper than that. I mean, last year, Kelvin Benjamin, mm-hmm. immediate impact, right? I mean, those guys throughout the first round, Brandon Cooks had an immediate impact, and he got hurt with New Orleans. An exceptional year, granted, but Amari Cooper's rated over certainly some of the guys that had an immediate impact last year. And I'm not saying he wouldn't.
Right.
Maybe he would come in here and he'd be, you know, a candidate for 90 catches as a rookie. We just don't know because no limits, John. No limits.
No limits, and that is a fascinating area to watch. Will the trend of wide receivers contributing that quickly continue?
All right, we've got to take a quick timeout, and we'll come back with a look at the fan feedback spotlight, asking you today which big-name draft prospect has the biggest chance to have a day one slide on Thursday in the NFL draft. Get your thoughts on that. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and, of course, post your thoughts on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I got to meet Paul McCartney, right? There's no way a Beatle knows anything about, you know, NFL or Broncos or whatever, and it turns out his wife has a 20-year-old son who's a diehard Jaguars fan. He wants to know how the Jaguars are going to be this year, how Blaine Bortles is going to be, you know. Is Julius Thomas going to be good for the Jaguars?
What? Paul didn't say that. That was Fivehead that said that. Peyton Manning apparently on a an interview. Where was he doing that interview, Tyler?
WUZ in Nashville.
All right, he was on in Nashville, and they asked him about SNL's 40th celebration, and said he didn't want a name drop, but it was pretty cool to meet Paul McCartney, and that's where he went in. Paul, apparently, Paul McCartney's kid, big Jaguar fan, probably playing over there. We drove past Paul McCartney's house, or one of them. He probably has a bunch of them, but in London, one of the cab drivers pointed out, "Yep, McCartney's on this right here," and what have you. So probably because of the Jags playing in London over the next couple of years, in the last couple of years, decided to become a Jaguar fan. But Peyton Manning said he got a lot of questions about Blaine Bortles.
Yeah, sure.
From Paul McCartney.
Why wouldn't he?
I don't know if is he saying that Sir Paul didn't know the quarterback?
Yeah. Or is that bad phone connection? The Blake sounded like Blaine?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so. Does Peyton Manning not know the name of the quarterback here in Jacksonville? Hey, Peyton, you only have one more Super Bowl than Blake Bortles. All right, just one. Should have a lot more than Blake, but only have one, all right?
For now.
And when he catches you this year, then what are you going to say?
That's right.
Right, pal? All right, fan feedback spotlight today asking you which high profile, define that as you wish, draft prospect you think could be in for the dreaded draft day slide. Tony, what do we get?
From Grant, he said Kevin White. From Paolo, too many good defensive ends in the top 10. I think Cooper will slide back to the top 20. From Cristiano, Beasley, and Jaguars will pick him after trading down. From Ortapalooza, Shane Ray, due to a dispute over foot issue, or Mariota out of the top 6 possibly. From Ocho Fisho, aside from the obvious Gregory, I could see Shane Ray dropping to the second round. From Eric Beasley, I don't think he's a top pick, but he could slide if not picked there. From Nick, Shane Ray, foot injury will scare teams. Hashtag pick Vic. From Demetrius, Pittsburgh offensive tackle T.J. Clemmings had a reported stress fracture in his foot. Big red flag, especially for a lineman. From Isaiah, Leonard Williams or Shane Ray. Hashtag pick Vic. And from at Irish Jaguar, I think Mariota could go anywhere from 1 to 16 plus.
Here on the Facebook page, Dustin Smith said he thinks Melvin Gordon will slide to the second round. The Jags pick him up because he's the best available. Imagine if they drafted Gurley and Gordon sitting there at 36. Right. Obviously, they would have liked Gurley probably significantly more than Gordon. But, you know, when you talk about the relative value, nobody expects Melvin Gordon to be there.
Yeah, I doubt
36.
It'd probably be a story. I don't think that would bother them, though.
No?
I mean,
it'd probably be a story. It would definitely be a story.
Well, if they take their guy, that's who they want.
I get you.
I personally think there's a big difference between the two backs. So.
And look, so do I. I think Gurley is a clear-cut number one for me. But regardless, Joshua Lee Wright said Randy Gregory tested and talked himself out of a top 10 selection. Think he'll slip to the low to mid-20s now. Hashtag Jaguars today. Jamie Clark said Jamarcus Winston will not be drafted first. It will be Mariota. Winston will go to Cleveland. I'll be very surprised if that happens, but we'll see if you call your shot. Kevin said Randy Gregory. Just too much information to the press. I agree. Keep your mouth shut. Casey went with Melvin Gordon. Could slide depending on how the team's picking 20th through 27th draft. Shane Cash said it should be Winston, but it will be Mariota. Johnny Crum said, let's say Amari Cooper, just so the Jags can pick him up with their second-round pick. It's not believable, but it would be awesome. Hashtag Jaguars today. That's great job. That's a guy who gets it right there. That's great job. I love that quote by Gus. Cameron went with Marcus Mariota, and Christopher Moore went with Jameis Winston, hashtagging it as well at Jaguars today. So I don't think Winston will slide. I think, and look, this isn't the telltale sign necessarily, but it's one other piece to the puzzle. Played in Derek Brooks' golf tournament. He's playing in it today in Tampa, right? Went down to participate in some of the charity stuff associated with that. You know, they usually have
bought a house
before. Right. It was at
signed
the airport.
A few
bought a bunch of houses.
Sponsorship
in
deals.
but in all seriousness, Derek Brooks has been very public about wanting them to draft him, saying, I will be a personal mentor to him, a Florida State to Tampa Bay superstar, obviously. So people are trying to, you know, it doesn't mean they're going to take him.
Right.
Lovie Smith didn't make him show up for this. What if they
ride together, though?
You know
what surprises me, Mike,
yeah,
is that you and I don't get more personal mentorship calls. Like, just
who that we should mentor people,
yeah,
or
people
that we
wanting
need,
us for
need
that role.
One.
So no, people wanting us for that role.
Who would I mentor?
I may just go out there and sort of offer myself a little more for that.
All right. Well, he's available, ladies and gentlemen. Keep an eye on that. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Folks, with gas prices on the rise, could be time to consider a diesel. A Volkswagen, the number one selling diesel car brand in America, and Tom Bush Volkswagen, just one of the many great dealerships in the family of dealerships. And don't forget the Volkswagen Golf won North American Car of the Year. Volkswagen Golf family won Motor Trend Car of the Year. So check them out, the Tom Bush family of dealerships, at Tom Bush Motors on Twitter. And also, don't forget the Foundation Professionals of Florida Predict the Pick Contest. You can enter one of two ways. You can email me at MikeD@1010XL.com, or you can post in the dedicated thread on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Please no tweets on this. Pick five, any five players you want. Name any five players. They could all be top of the round, first round prospects. They could be guys you think the Jags could grab in the mid rounds. But whoever gets the most names right that the Jaguars actually draft, and you may only get one. There's going to be somebody getting one. We know that because people will pick among the usual suspects. And
nah,
the great
somebody
likelihood.
Will get more than one.
Let's hope they do. Yeah. But any ties will break at our own discretion. But the prize is we've got a 20th season commemorative hard hat that we had signed by a number of members of the coaching staff and the roster last year, including Gus Bradley, Blake Bortles, Marquise Lee, Luke Jokel, and others on there. So pretty cool.
Cool.
Unique little prize.
And in relation to the fan feedback question we had today, talking about players that were going to slip in the draft, I just really quick went back and looked at the mock drafts right before the 2005 draft, when Aaron Rodgers slipped down into the mid-20s, and where was he being talked about before we got to the day of the actual draft? I saw one from Jarrett Bell that actually had him going number one overall to San Francisco instead of Alex Smith. The other four mock drafts I could find, nobody had him slipping past Tampa at five.
At five.
So it was a serious slide for Aaron Rodgers that day. I think everyone kind of assumed he was going to be a top 5 to 10 pick at the very worst, and he kept waiting and waiting and waiting.
Ah, Tampa. I read this weekend. Tampa has never given a second contract to any quarterback it's ever drafted.
That's crazy.
Never. They've never earned a second contract with the Bucs, including Vinny Testaverde, who they took number one overall. They took Dilfer eighth, I want to say. I think no quarterback has ever earned a second contract with the Buccaneers. Hey, way to go, Bucks. All right, nice track record on that. We had Bolt City Cap on Friday. He tweeted out an update on the Tampa game in Week 5. He said, as of this morning, 645 tickets have been secured in the block of 800 that the Bolt City Brigade has procured in Raymond James Stadium. He said that the group is in discussions to up the number to 1,000 from 800 right now, and the link will be open to all Jag fans that wish to join later today. Go to BoltCityBrigade.com to get more information on that, or follow Bolt City Cap on Twitter. Final thought for you, Johnny. What do you have coming up over the next few
days? My thought
is
that'll be a big weekend. I mean,
that will be a great
weekend.
That'll
be fun to see those guys down there.
They have them right in front of the ship.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like that gets on TV a lot, right?
When they take over an area, they take over. So it'll be fun to watch that number grow.
Absolutely. And hopefully some pundit who's calling the game, I'm sure, which will be shown to no one outside the Tampa and Jacksonville markets regardless, will at least point out the road warrior spirit.
I think they'll be noticed.
What are you writing about for the next few days?
MJD in the draft.
MJD will be in tomorrow. Hopefully joining us in studio.
He'll join
tomorrow.
You're his boy.
You never know with MJD.
That's right.
Just don't know. That the plan is for Maurice to join us on the show tomorrow, and he'll have a presser tomorrow as well.
It'll be a big week. A lot of live coverage for us, and we'll be going live MJD and then Jaguars.com live Wednesday, and of course the draft live after every pick.
You don't really need, because the draft's going to be on TV. You really probably don't, and we're going to broadcast what the Jags are doing. I don't know if you need to write about it at this point. Yeah? They can just listen to us and hear what happened.
Incorrect, but well played.
Thank you, sir. All right, Johnny O, follow him on Twitter, at John Osier. He is the senior writer for Jaguars.com. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I am Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor. We'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.